This is KPTZ 91.9 in Port Townsend, Washington, and I'm here with Steve King, the Public Works Director of the City of Port Townsend, and Aislinn, let's see.
Diamante.
Thank you, Aislinn. All right. Mm-hmm. So we have audio all around. Excellent. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hey, we've got audio and video. That's fantastic. This is Bureaucracy Now on KPTZ. My co-host this week is Steve King. I'm Jim Burke, and Taylor is out, unfortunately. And so is John Morrow, who's gone off to further to sunnier climes, I think. And Steve is now my co-host.
Good to see you. Good to be here. Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, glad you're here. Glad we're all here. Wow. So what are we going to talk about today, Steve?
Well, we, Aislinn, chair of the Council Committee for Infrastructure and Development, has been hearing staff for last year talk a lot about streets. And so since most of our public comments that come in through our citizen concern portal have something to do with potholes, we thought it would be a good thing to talk about.
Yes. I want to know more about potholes. I mean, I experienced them.
Good.
But I want to know more about how they are ameliorated.
Yeah. Great question. I'll just be honest, not very well. Our streets are in really rough situation. Uh-huh. And over the years, they just continue to deteriorate. And that's kind of an exponential deterioration. So we can't keep up with potholes. And so, you know, we're at a point where we've heard.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah.
Will you go back to the very beginning of how funding that work used to happen and what changed and then how the city sort of responded to that? Give people the full context of the middle leading up to where we are right now, because I feel like that's where a lot of the misunderstandings are rooted ultimately.
Well, that's a great point, Aislinn. So back in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was a couple of initiatives that were passed by the citizens of Washington, and that cut funding to transportation, cut license fees, and that cities really felt the brunt of that. And ever since then, the city has not really maintained streets like they had in the past. So over the years, it's even gotten worse as inflation hits us, and there's not really been an increase in dollars distributed. Right now, the only thing we get for tax dollars for street maintenance from the state is motor vehicle fuel tax, mm-hmm. which is about $200,000 a year. The rest of the funding that comes to support our street maintenance comes out of the general fund, which is general taxation, primarily utility tax. So that's kind of is that kind of getting at what you were talking about?
That's exactly what I wanted. Yeah. The background for, it's not like there was a decision one day where we were like, all that money we used to put into our streets, we're not going to do that anymore. I just want to make sure people understand that moment didn't happen, or at least it didn't happen at the local level.
You're not spending it on staff retreats.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm so glad, Aislinn, you brought that up, because most communities have had to adapt and develop new revenue for streets. And that usually comes in some sort of fee or taxes. And one of the most common one that we have that's used across the state, for example, is a license plate fee. And sometimes that's done as a license plate fee, and sometimes it's done as a sales tax. So the long and short of it is in order to not have the pothole problem, the circle all the way back to the beginning, we need to do something a little differently. And that's why we're working on this streets program to figure out how should we spend money on streets? What little money we have right now, do we need to change anything? Answer is yes. And then looking forward, if we raised revenue by 500,000, what does that get us? If we raised revenue by 1 million, what does that get us? And if we raised revenue by 1.5 million, what does that get us? And can we get ahead of our pothole problem. So that's kind of, that's where we've been over the last year. That sounds real simple, but there's a lot of detail. And I don't know, Aislinn, do you have anything you might want to throw in?
No, I think that's a really good way to lay it out. And, you know, we're going to have a little bit of an opportunity to see what it would look like to put almost $1 million more into our streets than we have in the past, thanks to these banked capacity funds. So it would be great maybe if you could help explain that for people out there, and then kind of the path forward to, so, you know, we'll see that money in action and what that does and how we determine what's the right amount to be investing, weighed against what are the ways we have to raise that money that we need.
Oh yeah, that's perfect. We do. We're lucky because we have this demonstration opportunity. This year, the council dedicated upwards of $900,000 towards street repairs, and that's a result of, we call it bank capacity. What that means is that's when East Jefferson Fire went to the county, and it left us some taxing authority, and the council passed the tax increase to put into streets. And so we have a list of streets that we're going to tackle. $1 million, it sounds like a lot of money, but I got to be honest, it doesn't buy a lot of street repair. Nevertheless, it will show the community what we can do. And I hope it's a way to show that we can claw our way out of this problem, little at a time, and get our streets back into shape.
Steve, I have a couple of questions for you. And one is, I know that when it comes to the streets here, that there are the substrates, the ground here is not like bedrock. And so I noticed that the various things that fail here and all around the Puget Sound, sometimes things washboard. Sometimes when a pothole takes hold, it starts to grow little potholes around it. It creates a pothole family. And what I notice is that the ground beneath it starts to crumble and fade and depress. And I wonder, is there a way, when these repairs are being done, to increase the stability of the substrate? Or is that something that, because we live in a soft earth environment, we just can't stop anyway?
Great question. I love it. This is where the Inga nerd in me gets excited.
There we go. I thought it might.
We are going to do, so Lawrence Street is a great example of where the substrate
is
a disaster, right?
Yeah.
And Lawrence is the fear factor. That puts the fear in us that, you know, the rest of our streets are going to go the way of Lawrence, and which is very, very expensive to fix.
Right.
We are going to try to do a test patch or test repair on Lawrence, mm-hmm. somewhere on the hill where braking, in this case, truck braking is what's causing a lot of the problem. And what's underneath Lawrence, the pavement in Lawrence, is a really soft soil that when it gets wet, it turns to like slime and it gets really, there's no structural integrity.
Slippery.
It's very slippery. Yeah. And that's why you see the pavement literally moving on. It's just moving down the hill.
The washboard effect.
We're going to do a test patch and try to strengthen the subgrade by mixing in lime or crushed concrete to chemically stabilize that soil with, just lime. And that's a common practice in some areas of the country. We did a little, you know, bench top test, and it does firm things up with that soil.
That's cool.
That could save us a lot of money.
Are concrete streets a possibility on Lawrence Street, or is that way too expensive?
Probably way too expensive.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You got me thinking. So I saw last summer I was at the farmer's market, and you guys had a chart, and you had a map of the city, and you had various streets delineated as streets that you were going to work on this year. Is that map changed, or is it pretty much the same?
Pretty much the same. Yeah, yeah. It's very, very close to the same. And what you'll see in the city is we're going to start with, I want to throw out one more thing.
Sure.
We have to fix the drainage, the water situation.
Right.
You'll see that most of our streets fail from the outside in, from the shoulder in, and they move, and that's because of water.
Right.
So what the public will see is that our crews will be working on the shoulders and ditching this spring, mm-hmm. in preparation for pavement repair. If we don't do that, there's no sense in trying to repair the pavement because the next, you know, whatever we repair will just fall apart.
The next freeze-thaw yeah. cycle will just destroy it.
Yeah. So you'll see a lot of work. Some of those streets that we focused on is up on the Castle Hill area, mm-hmm. right above the hospital and to the north a little bit.
Right.
And then there's some other streets spread out through town. Yeah.
And is the project that's happening between Sheridan and Rainier Street on Discovery Road, is that already budgeted and that's a separate thing from all these repairs?
Yeah, that's a that project's a major overhaul on the street, and that's a funded by grant dollars.
Oh, super!
From the states.
Yeah. Okay, and when does that start?
That I've been hoping to say that's going to start next month
for about 3 years,
about a year now.
Okay.
But we should be getting close to getting construction going here late spring, early summer.
Super, super! Yeah. I'm excited. I drive up that a lot, you know. Often, because a lot of people use that as a shortcut from Discovery Road to avoid going up Sims Way. You take Discovery Road over to 19 and then you get out of town. And that's how people get out of town. A little dangerous up there because it gets really narrow from Rainier Street to Mill Road because mm-hmm. There's no shoulder there. Is that's not part of that project, is it?
No, that's another project. That's another project that's probably about $5 million in the future.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Is there any way to create shoulders on that section of road so that at least people can walk and not feel like they have to jump out of the way of traffic when traffic goes by?
You know, that section of Discovery is a real challenge because there's a lot of cars.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done a little bit of a test. Edge Lane Road's out on Coon Street. And I don't think we would do that on Discovery. And
I think it would be too much traffic for that, right?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit much. And so I think we're probably going to need to get some grant funding to get some shoulders in on that section.
I understand. Okay. Yeah. All right. I'm very excited about this. so here's you mentioned license plates. I know that they have license plates for like the Seahawks and national parks and state parks and orcas and all sorts of specialty license plates. Could there be PT pothole plates? People could buy into and help repair potholes or help fix streets in PT. I know it's a pie in the sky idea on my part. I know.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe Aislinn would want to chime in on that.
You want to weigh in on that, Aislinn?
The pun on that one.
No, Steve. I think this is totally your wheel.
Well, we'll see what kind of trouble we can get you into, Steve, while John's away.
Yeah, right. I see now.
See, it's all just a gotcha moment. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
No. So tell me more about the actual areas that you're focusing on.
Sure. There's a series of streets, 10th, 11th, 12th up there, right above Sheridan, mm-hmm. that are really in really rough shape, and they need some drainage work. We're working on the streets that are going parallel to the hill, so parallel to Sheridan,
mm-hmm.
and that will allow us, let me back up. We're working on streets that go perpendicular to Sheridan to work on the drainage. So the next time we come back, we can work on the parallel streets. So it's kind of a sequencing.
Right.
There's a method to our madness. It won't look like it to the average person, but we actually are trying to do things in a stepwise fashion to maximize every dollar that we have.
Well, that's why we have this show. So we can get the word out there and people can understand things are changing. Don't be alarmed. It's all for the better, but it might just be messy in the meantime.
Yeah,
like a lot of changes. Yeah. Is there anything besides potholes that you want to talk about? Other infrastructure things that you want to discuss?
Well, I know Aislinn wanted to bring up one thing. I wanted to add one other, just kind of FYI for the public.
Sure.
As part of our street program. Historically, the city has done a lot of mowing along the edge of the right-of-ways. You'll see our big tractor out there. That takes a tremendous amount of staff time and is costly.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's actually normally a requirement of adjoining property owners to take care of the grass and the brush in front of their property. Mm-hmm. So we're going to pull back on that mowing and ask the property owners to do their, you know, keep their frontage cleared. And that will allow us to put our crew time on repairing pavement.
Well, that's good. So. How are they going to get the memo? Wait, I think I just muted myself. What happened? Sorry.
Okay.
How are people going to get the memo on that?
Well, we've got a blurb in our newsletter this month, and we'll have a much more explicit information campaign starting in March when things start growing and everybody starts thinking about springtime maintenance. Yeah.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So what else do we have? We're talking streets, infrastructure, development. What do we?
Aislinn, did you want to talk about the pit count?
I do want to talk about the pit count. I'll get my blurb in there, and then maybe we can swing back around to sort of the topics that we're taking as we finish up this comprehensive streets plan and letting people know how they can weigh in on the plan that you've been working
on. Okay, I do want to interrupt you again for a second, Aislinn. I'm sorry. I forgot to remind people that they can write to dj@kptz.org. dj@kptz.org if they want to ask either of you questions or even me a question for Bureaucracy Now. Okay, continue. Sorry.
Perfect. Thanks. So little streets break. The point in time count is the annual way that we count as a county people experiencing homelessness, both sheltered and unsheltered. And getting these counts as accurate as possible has huge impacts on the amount of money that can come into our community for housing, mm-hmm. For particularly, affordable housing. And so the count starts today. We have a week to wrap it up. All of the service providers are participating. There's people who are going out to, all of the locations where we know that we serve people, and as well as locations where we know that some people congregate who aren't necessarily being served or who are connected to services right now. And then I wanted to make sure everyone also knows that at the Winter Warming Center downtown, mm-hmm. they are doing the count today where they have goodies. They have things to hand out to people who are experiencing homelessness. So this would be a really great day if you know somebody in need to help them get down to the Winter Warming Center so they can both be counted and get some supplies that might help them. And then they'll also be open and participating in the count on Sunday and Monday.
Fantastic.
So
that actually affects how many county dollars, state dollars, federal dollars come into the area for transitional housing, low-income housing, shelters?
Yeah, so... we have to give our counts back up to the state. Basically, it's a lot of it is run kind of through Department of Commerce as to then how we're able to access funding for our needs in the future.
Interesting. The Department of Commerce. Okay. sorry. I'm trying to get my head around that. Okay.
I mean, that number goes to a lot of places. That's just one of the places that we report it to. We are required to have a 5-year plan to end homelessness, and so we include those numbers in that plan as well. But the counts go to a number of places.
Right, and in terms of housing, is there a plan also for the middle? I know there's various ways in which housing is. Being built in for low income. I mean, there's Habitat and there's other projects mm-hmm. that are going up that are going to be for very low income people. But what about middle class people who are professionals that make between $80,000 and $130,000 a year? Is there a plan? And is the city developing part of their plan for that segment who sometimes say they can't afford to live here, but they have a decent job and they're professional people, but they have to live elsewhere?
Yeah. So those are separate plans. So the one that the pit count goes into is particularly targeted at people at lower incomes than that. And that's governed at the state level. That's not something we get to say also add these people to that count. Right.
Right. I understand.
Yeah. And then, but no, part of our overall strategy as a city addressing housing issues across the spectrum absolutely includes the types of housing that are, were traditionally available or maybe in, you know, could be made available to those income brackets. And we're next month, when Emma Bowen is on, I'll be back and we'll be talking about some of the code changes that we're planning to make that has more of an impact on those people who are in the market of housing but are being kind of priced out by market forces and what right. we can do to impact that from the government side.
Okay, cool, cool. And I see that Evans Vista is starting. Is that right?
Yeah, we have our consultant on board, and they'll be kicking off soon with some outreach meetings, and I think that's going to happen in March, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's pretty fun to get started on that.
But what are they building up on Rainier right now, right near the traffic circle there or the rotary? They're building something.
I believe that's a 36 unit apartment complex. Yep. If you're by Rainier. Yeah. Wow. Rainier. Okay. Yeah.
And that's not part of Evans Vista.
No.
No, it's just another thing.
Those are just privately developed market rate apartments.
Wow. Okay. Well, it's still housing is housing. That's good. Yeah. I thought that was part of Evans Vista. I thought that was like the first shovelful of dirt that they were shoveling out there. But is Evans Vista on the other side of that roundabout? Is that what I'm missing?
Yeah, Evans Vista is over by DSHS on that side of way over on the other side of 20. Yeah.
So toward the mill.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Yep. All right. Gotcha. I was confused
We're still a few years out from turning dirt on that one.
Okay. Oh, I get it. And that's why you need the sewer lift because it's downhill of.
Yes.
I was trying to figure out how you needed a sewer lift station up the hill there by the Rainier roundabout. I thought, well, that's uphill. Why? Okay. Well, that was my bad. I was all backwards on that. And speaking of that, you guys paved Water Street, that section that had the sewer pipe under it failed. You fixed that up. Did you scope the sewer pipe all the way to the ferry and find out what's going on in there?
We haven't scoped it yet, but we did find out what's going on, and we'll be scoping it to inspect for treatment to preserve it.
Okay.
We did find, I think I shared with Taylor last time I was on, that the hydrogen sulfide gas that comes out of sewer water ate the pipe out, and that's what caused the collapse. So we do need to get some other pipe rehabilitated before it collapses.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Wow. This is good. What else? Is there anything else you want to tell our listeners? I'm trying to see if there's anything else we got on email. Oh, look at this. Fog lines and center lines. Oh, here's a good one.
Oh.
Why did the city not paint more fog and center lines on streets that other years have been done? This is, okay.
Good question. So we, for one thing, the price went up. It's very, very expensive. The price over doubled on us. For normally we spent about $30,000 and the prices came in at closer to $70,000 this year. Yeah. And so that was one reason. The other reason is we're focusing on fog lines because fog lines are what is most important for safety.
Those are the ones on the side.
On the side. Yeah. The white.
So
the
you
white
don't go off line. Into the ditch in the dark.
Yeah.
In the
and
rain.
What we find is people tend to drive using the fog line, and the center line actually induces, when you have yellow skip center line, mm-hmm. it induces higher speeds. So people tend to go slower when there's no center line. So we're focusing on painting the fog lines. And we did have to skip a few streets this year. We tried to skip the ones that had the best paint on them, and we'll rotate them in next year.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Well, that's a great question. Thank you for our listener for that one. I don't think there's any other. Let's see. Nope. There's a poem for later. For the Midlife Crisis Dance Party, there's a poem waiting for Ray Sarabin. That's fantastic. Well, I think we're almost there. We're at the end of our time together. This is terrible. Wow, time flies when you're having fun. I will play a song by Derek and the Dominoes to play us out. Thank you, Steve, for co-hosting with me. I appreciate you being nice to me. I only do this about every 2 or 3 months. I'm getting a little better at it. And Aislinn, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you got enough time to speak.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Jim. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I'm sure we'll be back. Yeah.
All right. Thank you both so much, and okay. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.